Welcome everyone. It's certainly a good time to do Purim stuff now that we're in the month of Adar. I think we left off chapter 4. Does that sound right? On page 30. And we got to Haman's decree. And we talked about Haman as a person, he was willing to wipe out men, women, and children just because his ego, just because one person wouldn't bow down to him. And we explained that Haman is a prototype, that there are people that will let one detail upset them and throw them off kilter. You know, one thing doesn't go the way they like it, and he had so much going for him, and look at what upset him. We also talked about what Haman said about the Jewish people in order to convince Ahasuerus that they could be destroyed. So he mentioned, this is on page 28, he said the Jewish people are mefuzer and mefurid. So mefuzer could be they're like spread out. Mefurid means that they don't get along with each other. They don't stick together. And therefore, it's very easy to wipe them out because, you know, this one won't stick up for that one. There's so many synagogues and so many groups, and they're not one. So it shouldn't come as a coincidence that the way we celebrate the holiday, it's all about unity. We start off the beginning of the holiday with the Matzah HaShekel, which is the half coin, which we do together as a whole, and then we give gifts to each other. The real idea is to increase friendship, that we want to show each other that we care about each other, we want to be friends, and we take care of the poor, and then we have a community feast. And all the ideas are that Haman's decree came about because we weren't unified. And so part of the goal of Purim is to have that unity. And that's the and that's perhaps the idea to know when we begin. Okay, now let's see what Mordechai's response was. We're just beginning. We're actually reviewing on chapter 4. Mordechai yodes kol asher nasa. Very interesting. It says that Mordechai knew everything that took place. So they ask an interesting question. How did he know? Did he have spies? Like what? How did he know? Like, he knew things that Esther didn't do. No. So some people suggest that there is the idea that when people are very close with Hashem, he sometimes tells them his secrets. And we find this idea, and believe it or not, there are people in Israel, or there are very big righteous people that seem to know things that we don't know how they know it. Like, it's almost like Hashem tells them, gives them wisdom that is just amazing. Like, how do they know, or how do they? I've had that experience in my life. You know, it's almost like you would like go to them, and Hashem would know what was bothering you, or they would know what you needed, or they would know things that no one else would have known, and they seem to know it. There was a great rabbi that was a medical expert, and he wasn't a medical expert. He was a great rabbi. And people would come to him usually before surgery for a blessing, because surgery is very dangerous, especially in those days. He passed away in the 60s. And they would come to him for a bracha, and he would ask them, you know, what kind of surgery would they have, and he'd be able to advise them as to what they should do. Should they have it? Should they not have it? And he was so good at it that the doctors in Israel started to call him for advice. So some people had this theory that since he studied the Talmud, that he knew the Talmud goes into part of the kosher laws of deal with understanding the organs and which, you know, what's healthy and what's not healthy. And he just was so brilliant that his understanding of things, it also helps if you're around a lot of people and you've been around and you've seen, you know, different people that meet people that have had this procedure, have had that, and you see what the result was, and were they happy, were they not happy, what did they think. And so, but there is this idea that people that are close to Hashem sometimes get information. They seem to, there's a word for it in Hebrew called like Ruach HaKodesh, like divine spirit. Now, on the other hand, there are plenty of phonies who, you know, charlatans who, you know, pretend that they know things that they don't know, and that are not legit, so to speak. But certainly somebody like Mordechai, some people say that Hashem told him. Hashem revealed to him that the Jewish people was in danger. But we don't know how he knew. That's what I'm just trying to say. It could have been some divine means, or maybe he had a spy in the palace. I don't know. It just says Mordechai knew. He knew Eskol Asher Naseh. He knew all about it. And we'll see Vayikra Mordechai es Begadav. So Mordechai's first effort, and this is very important, the first effort when a person faces a decree is to realize that we should do teshuvah, that we should return to Hashem. And part of that process is that a person has to realize that they're in danger, and that what he did over here was he tore his clothing because the Jewish people was in danger. And sometimes a person is very upset when they hear something, and I think we're all somewhat guilty of this. Like sometimes a person has a certain something that's hanging over them, and it's terrible, it's awful that they have this situation. And when we first hear about it, it bothers us. And we're upset about it, and if we're really, like, you know, kind-hearted, like, we can't just enjoy our meal because we're worried about our friends and our neighbor and our loved ones, and look what they face and what they do. But that's the first day, maybe the second day. But after a while, we kind of get used to it, and then we forget all about it, and then we can go to sleep, and everything is fine. So the nature of it is, as time goes on, we're not bothered anymore by it. We forget about it. We just get used to it. I remember when they had that terrible attack in the synagogue in Israel, and so the fundraising that was done right afterwards, like, everybody, what can I do for those kids? What can I do for the wife? What can I do for the family, those poor people? And everybody was compassionate, and, you know, now it's 6 months later, some of those people are still in hospitals, and some of them are still in comas, and they're still, you know, there was a guy went in there with a butcher knife and started attacking the people who were praying. But we all know it. It's just, after a while, it gets off our mind, and we're not thinking about it so much. So when a person wants to make sure that he doesn't forget, so what they would do is they would put on something that was itchy. Sackcloth. You know, if you have a little sackcloth, I'm not suggesting anybody do this, by the way. But if what happens is you get uncomfortable, and you say to yourself, why am I wearing this? It's so uncomfortable. And you think, oh, I can't rest. Look at all the people that are going to be pain and suffering if we don't do something. And so if a person feels that they can't forget a situation, during the Holocaust years, there were many people that tried very very hard to do things that they wouldn't forget their people. They didn't want to forget their brothers. They didn't want to forget, because it's just human nature that after a while it doesn't bother us. We stop thinking about it. And so what Mordechai did was he put on sackcloth, he put on ashes. He wasn't going to forget. This was not time to be complacent. This was time for real action. The Yechi B'Sokha'ir. And he walked out in the middle of the city, Yizak Zaka Gadola, and he let out a cry, a big cry, a bitter cry. Vayavo, and he walked Adlif Neshar Melech. He went from there to the king's palace. He ain't level, but he had to stop because the rules were you weren't allowed to go to the king's palace if you were wearing sackcloth. You had to dress up a certain way if you want to, you know, no shirt, no shoes, no no admittance. So apparently sackcloth, you know, wasn't, you know, I guess it's like a barley bag or something, or it probably doesn't look so nice, I guess, to wear sackcloth. So they didn't let him in. I don't know if he knew they wouldn't let him in. Ubekol medinim, not only Mordechai, but every country, Malkam Asher, Dvar HaMelech V'Duso, wherever people heard about these rules, Magia Evel Gadol, people, the word Evel is like mourning. People were mourning. And people were fasting, and they were crying, Umisbad Sak, and they put on sackcloth, Efer Yutzu L'Rabim. So wherever Jews heard about this terrible decree that they were to be wiped out and butchered and slaughtered by the Haman and his people, it was a terrible thing. People were crying, and they realized that changes had to be made. They realized that Hashem was angry with us, and we were in very great danger. Verse 4. I didn't do my homework. I told you that last week that certain verses are spelled differently than they're read. Mm-hmm. And there's always a reason why. And so we have another one over here. If you see this over here, Vitavona, that's another one. You see that little circle there? There's one of these creeds and ksivs. But anyway, so, and it came, Naros Esther Vesiriseha. So Esther, meanwhile, was in the palace, And people in the palace are removed from everyday life. They have no idea what's going out there. And you know, which queen was it that said, let them eat cake? You know, like the, you know, people were dying of starvation. What?
Marie Antoinette.
Was she the one? They were dying of starvation and someone said, they have no more bread. And she said, okay, let them eat cake. Like she just, in her mind, she had no idea that she thought, okay, if we don't have bread, we'll have cake, we'll have dessert, we'll have... She didn't realize that meant they didn't have food. But how could the queen of a country, because they existed away from the community. So Esther was deep in her palace with her ladies, and somehow they told her that there was a decree out against the Jewish people. And the queen was very upset. She heard about this, she was very upset. But Tishlach Begadim. And apparently she also heard that Mordechai was there, and she wanted to have a consultation with him. You know, they were the leaders of the Jewish people, and she was the queen. So she sent to Mordechai to come to her. And it's very interesting. There's a lot of discussion back and forth between Mordechai. Sometimes Mordechai tells her what to do. Sometimes she tells him what to do. So, v'tishlach begadim l'halbishes Mordechai. She sent clothing to dress him up, because that you can't come in the king's palace unless you if you're wearing the right clothes. V'lahasir sakom olav, and take off the sackcloth. V'lo kibol. Mordechai said, nope, ain't doing it. Mordechai, I guess he had accepted upon himself that he would not rest. He would not rest for a minute. It was not, as long as the Jewish people were in danger, there was nothing to think about. He could not rest. So even though he needed to speak to Esther, and even though it was an emergency, he was not going to take off the sack. I guess, and so therefore he didn't. Batikra Esther lasak. So Esther needed to get to talk to Mordechai to find out what was going on, what he suggested. So she called Hasach. And we don't know who Hasach is. There's different opinions. One opinion was that this was Daniel. Daniel was a famous Jew who had been taken captive by the emperor maybe some 20 years earlier. And Jews were considered a wise people, and they were taken for public service, going all the way back to Yosef in Egypt. And you should know, even in Europe during the Middle Ages, they always would hire Jews to manage their businesses, because they knew that the Jews were the people of the book, and they were honest, and they were often they would take Jews and put them in positions of government or authority. Sometimes the peasants didn't like it because they had to collect the taxes. That's, you know, if you're put in charge of the so Hasach was one of these people, was a famous righteous Jewish person. He was taken as a little boy from Yerushalayim, and he was brought up to work in the palace. So Esther used him as a reliable messenger to Mordechai. Now, the interesting thing is, he'll be mentioned a little bit here, and then we don't hear from him again. So it's a debate about what happened to him. Some people say Haman had him assassinated. Not clear. But either that or so, Fatikra Esther Lasach Mesri Sam Malach Hashem Lefaneha. He was one of her trustworthy guards. V'tetzaveo Mordechai. And she said, go to Mordechai, Ledas Mazah Al Mazah. Find out what's going on. The Hebrew is very, very interesting. It says, literally means Mazah Al Mazah.
What?
Yeah, isn't that funny? Like, what's this? What's this? What's this on what's this? I guess it means what's the decree and what's to be done about it, something like that. Like,
not what's up.
Yeah, not what's up. How you doing? Right, right. That's right. Mazah, what is this? Al Mazah. The Yetzirah so Hasak goes to Mordechai Rochov Eir. Mordechai is the middle street. Hashrev Neshar in front of the king's palace, the king's gate. The Yagilo Mordechai is Kol Shekaro. And Mordechai tells him the whole shebang. He tells everything that happened. Ves Parshas Akesis. And he mentions the money. Something in life you always need to know, they always say follow the money. Mm-hmm. Like, it just happens to be that a lot of the things that happen in life have to do with money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they say it's not the money, but it really is the money. That's just good to know. So over here, the fact, Haman had arranged that whoever attacked the Jews got to keep their money. So you always find people that if you say anybody, if you want to attack any wealthy Jews, you can keep whatever you want for yourself. So that's the type of thing that would be advantageous to people. That would be easy to find volunteers who would be happy to take away all our wealth and harm us in the process. Also, Haman had bribed the king. What's interesting is the question they ask is, why was it important that he bribed the king? According to what we said earlier, the king refused. The king said it wasn't necessary to pay him. But it could even be that that's worse, that the king so much wanted to wipe out the Jews, he didn't even need the money to do that. That's how serious it was. So he told them about the money. Asher Omar Haman Lishko Alginzi HaMelech and by Yehudim, by the Jews, of them to destroy them. So then,
that circle again.
Yes, another one. Very good.
Well, except you can figure that word out. Yeah. I mean, we know what that means.
Yehudim are Jews, but what's the extra yud? Yehudim. Is it that again? Maybe if I have time, I'll try to go through several of them at a time and just see what they say about them. I'm not sure what the extra yud does. Why it would be what it teaches us or why it's there. So and then Vespeshegen Ksav Hadas, and he gave him a copy of the decree. If somebody's going to publish a decree, maybe it's not so bad, maybe there's room to remove the decree. So Mordechai gave to Esther a copy of the decree, Ashenitzim Bishul Ashmidam, to destroy them. Nasamlo Laharitzis Esther. He said, show this to Esther, Lahagilo, tell her everything. Lutzavasaleha, and command her, Lovu Elamelech, to go to the king, Liskanelo, and beseech him, Levakish Mefanav Al Amma, and that she should beseech the king on her people. That we can't let this decree happen. So that was the message that Mordechai sent to Esther. Go to the king and save your people. Verse 9. So Esther came back to Esther and she told her everything Mordechai said. But Tomer Esther, verse 11. And Esther said, and she said, tell Mordechai the following. Kol Abde Amelech. All the servants of the king, Va'am Medinos Hamelech, and every country of the king knows, Yodim Asher Kol Ish V'Isha, that every man and woman, Asher Yavel Hamelech Al Chatz Afinimis, that if you come to the king's inner sanctum, Asher Lo Yikorei, and you are not called, you come without invitation, that's it. Doso Lahamis, you'll be killed. In fact, the Medrash says that when Esther was walking into the king unannounced, the guards were already dividing who would keep her jewelry. Because, meaning when they saw her walking in, the rule was that you have to execute somebody that walks in without being called. And so they were getting ready to kill her. And what happened was the king turned around, unless the king puts his scepter out, his gold scepter, and then the person will live. So we had the background for this with Vashti, which was that they made it as the one rule that everybody knew that Vashti didn't come when she was called, and they were afraid that Vashti would come and convince Achashverosh not to kill her. So they made a really strong rule that the wives couldn't come or the queens couldn't come unless they were called. And so therefore she was saying, this is risky. Esther was being practical over here, right? She was saying, why should I risk going? I might be killed. And you might say, well, you need to save the Jewish people. She said, well, I'm going to get called soon anyways. Banilo crazy, love all the melech, Zeshlo Shivum. I haven't been there in 30 days. He hasn't called me. So very soon he's going to call me, and I should wait till he calls me in a good mood. If I go in without calling, he'll be very upset with me. He might even kill me. So this, what Esther is saying, makes a lot of sense. Mordechai didn't like it. The Yagin the Mordechai is called Divrei Esther. Why do you think he didn't like it? So, in one of my previous lives, I taught children. You know, I was a teacher for a little bit, and one of the things you learn is about excuses. That kids come up with all kinds of excuses, and I'm sure there are legitimate excuses, but sometimes you can tell that when they start making excuses, that it's an excuse. They don't want to do it, and therefore they come up with different ingenious reasons why I didn't do my homework, or why I can't do my homework, or why I can't take the test, or the
dog ate it.
Well, the dog ate it, right, that's right. So Mordechai was afraid, you know, when it comes to the life and death of the Jewish people, you just can't make excuses, no matter how good they are. Like, Once you allow some idea that, well, maybe there's a better time, you can't think like that. Now, when you're dealing with life and death, it's not time to be practical. It's not time to, I shouldn't say not to be practical, but it's not time to take any chances. If something is life and death, you move. You don't start with. So Mordechai felt that it wasn't. He saw that this was a decree from Hashem, and that Hashem wanted us to. There's an idea like this that when Hashem sees that we are willing to have what's called Mesiras Nefesh, willing to risk our life for something, that has great value in His eyes. And when Achashverosh invited the Jewish community to come to his party, many of them could have avoided coming and said, "We'll work it out, he'll understand." And instead, they all went along with it. There were very few people that risked the bad feelings of not coming. So in order to combat that, a person combats that by willing to show that they are willing to give up their life for the Jewish people. There's a famous Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim lived during the communist time, when the communists took over Russia. And there were tens of thousands of yeshivas in Russia at that time. And the communists were the enemy of religion. They sent the rabbis to Siberia, and they forbid the practice of religion. They closed the synagogues, they closed the mikvahs. And what happened was that the Jews ran away from Russia, and they went to Poland. Russia, in those days, there were a whole bunch of countries over there, and the borders weren't that secure. And it was pretty much, things weren't good in Russia, you crossed the border to Poland, you went to Yugoslavia, you went to one of the other countries that were there. And people saw that it was impossible to practice their religion in Russia under the communists, so they, en masse, people tried to cross the borders and went to the other countries. So he said that he wondered if maybe they should have stayed and fought it out with the communists. You can imagine, a few rabbis fighting the communists. Stalin was bloody and killed. And they asked him, "Well, what do you mean? They would have butchered us. What do you mean stay?" He said that when people show Mesiras Nefesh, when they show that something is really important to them, and they show that they're willing to give up everything in order to do this, that has the ability to change Hashem's mind or to win favor in His eyes. When you're willing to give up your life, so Mordechai felt that even if it was dangerous, yet if you show you're willing to take that risk, then that can get atonement for the Jewish people. That can save the Jewish people. When you do something and you do it with 100% that you're taking all the risks, there's a great power in that when a person does that's what we call Mesiras Nefesh, being willing to do it no matter what. So that's what he said. It says over here. Verse 13, V'yomer Mordechai la Shiva l'Esther. Mordechai said to Esther, "Al tidami b'nafshech." Mordechai says it's almost insulting in a certain way, but Mordechai kind of thought that maybe Esther wasn't so worried about the Jewish people being destroyed, because at least she was alive and she was in the palace and maybe she could do certain things. So Mordechai said, you shouldn't think that this is not urgent, and you shouldn't think that maybe you or your family will be saved and you're safe in the king's house, Mikol Yehudim. Ki hachresh tachrishi be'esa zos. Verse 14, if you are quiet, this word cherish means like deaf or like unable to talk. If you are quiet at this time, Revak Fatsala, he says, I know that the Jewish people will be saved, but you won't have a part in it. The Jewish people, if it comes time to be saved, Hashem will find a way to save us. And it won't come through your efforts, Makom Acher. But you know what will happen to you? Va'ata Beisa Vicha Tovedu. You and your father's house will be destroyed. Miyo Deya, who knows? Ima Es Kazos Agil Malchus. Maybe this is the reason why you were chosen to be the one. So Mordechai really strong words he says to Esther that he wants her to go with this Mesiras Nefesh, understanding that we have to risk our. If there's anything worth risking your life for, it's the Jewish people. There's nothing greater than that, to risk your life for the Jewish people. V'tomer Esther v'lashivel Mordechai. So Esther, when she hears this, she agrees. She's going to do it, but she has a very important point. She says, if I'm going to go give up my life, I want to make sure that the Jewish people find favor in Hashem's eyes. So you know what you need to do. Lech, go. Kanos es kol Yehudim, gather everybody, all the Jews together that are in the city. V'samal, I fast for me. By the way, the time is Esther, right? They fast for me. Al tochu, don't eat. Val tishtu, don't drink. Shlosha yamim. The original fast was 3 days. Be pretty hungry after that, 3 days, right? Shlosha yam v'layla. Now you ask, how can you fast 3 days? This was life and death. This was it. I mean, either this would work or the Jewish people would be wiped out. This was a real danger. I don't know if the Jewish people have ever come this close to being wiped out as they did at this time, because the Jewish people were located in all the countries of Ahasuerus, and Haman was the most important and powerful person in the country, and the decree was published, and we didn't know how we would survive it. So she said, I'll have you fast for 3 days and three nights. The Gamani and Narosaya, and I'm also going to fast. And she said, it's interesting, she said she was going to have her maidens fast with her, which is interesting. I guess if they would be fasting too, that would, it's interesting. And that's how I'll come to the king. Asher lo kadas, and I'm going to risk my life. Now, I don't know if she's being pessimistic, and you might say, I guess she's still secretly wasn't happy about this. She would have rather gone without. Nobody wants to risk their life. So she said, "Kasher avadati avadati," and if I'll be lost, I'll be lost. In other words, it could be that she wanted to survive, and so she said, "Let me wait till the king calls me." And Mordechai was saying, "When the Jewish people are at stake, it's not time to think about yourself." So she's saying that I'm willing to go, and I'm not going to worry about myself. If I myself will be lost, I'll be lost. I have to do what I can to save the Jewish people. Other people, there's a very interesting background that's given over here. There's a view in the Talmud that Mordechai had married Esther. We mentioned that before, that secretly they were husband and wife. And deep down, Esther had hoped that she'd be able to go back to being his wife at some point. And that, you know, Ahasuerus was we'll see, the kings didn't last very long. If you have parties for 180 days, and a lot of cholesterol and a lot of wine, and it's just not a healthy lifestyle. They you know, they average about 10 years, and then the people around them were always trying to assassinate them, and so they really didn't, you know, there was a good chance that Esther would be able to come back to resume her life with Mordechai at some point. So there's a rule like this. If you're a married woman, has relations with a man who's not her husband, willingly, she's not allowed to go back to her husband. In other words, if she's not loyal to her husband, if she commits adultery, she's not legally supposed to go back to her husband. If she didn't do it willingly, if she was forced, then she is allowed to go back to her husband. So until now, whenever she went to the king, she didn't have a choice. When the king calls her, you have to come. But if she went to the king, then on her own two feet, that meant that she was willingly going to the king. So she was saying that this would give up her chance to ever go back to Mordechai, never have a Jewish life again. And so she was saying over here that she was going, but with full recognition, kasher avadati avadati, if I'll be lost, I'll be lost. This is it. Her life would never be the same. The Yaver Mordechai, the Yaz Koloshis used to Esther. Mordechai accepted what she said. One of the interesting things is, anybody know what time of year this was, the 3 day fast?
It's over here, Passover.
It was Passover. Oh, it does? Oh, okay. Spills the beans. Yeah, it was Passover time. And it ended up being that year they didn't have a Seder, that everybody was fasting because. And it could be that this was Esther's philosophy, was she felt that it was like, so Mordechai, it says that like Mordechai said to her, how can you fast? It's Passover. She said, well, if there's no Jewish people, there'll be no Passover. It was almost like this was so dangerous that when the people, the danger was so real, there was also the fear that all the anti-Semites had no reason to wait to destroy the Jewish people. They would go ahead and begin right away. Why should they wait? So at every day that went by, they got closer to being destroyed. If you saw during World War II, when the Nazis took over, in many countries, Lithuania and Poland, they didn't wait for the Nazis to destroy the Jews. They started harming the Jewish people before the Nazis came. Because once they understood that's what the Nazis wanted, they just went and they pillaged and they took away and the they took away Jewish property and they killed Jews. Not the Nazis, the local Lithuanians and the local Poles. Because once the decree was out there that they understood that the Jews were in disfavor, they could do with them whatever they wanted. Jews were in danger everywhere, and that's what happened here. And so, in an emergency, you have to take emergency measures.
Of us shared in a way, you know, that what's going to be.
In other words, when she is saying what's going to be is going to be, I think it's more than that, though. I think that she was saying that she was going to risk her life, and even though she was fully aware that she might be lost. In other words, that's this idea, like I said, mesiras nefesh, being willing to give your life. Mm-hmm. We have this similar, by the way, when the Egyptians were chasing us after we left Egypt, and the sea was in front of us. We have a tradition that somebody named Nachshon jumped in, and waiting to see if the sea, everybody was waiting to see if the sea would part. He wasn't going to wait. He jumped in, and that's, like I said, he was, when we were in danger. You gotta take the leap of faith at some point. You gotta jump in. So that's how I understood it. It could be, though, that there's an idea that it's beshared. If Hashem wants me to be destroyed, I'll be destroyed. That's what you're saying, Akasha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be. So V'yavar Mordechai. So Mordechai did. Now I just want to point out that we don't fast. When we fast, we don't fast just because there's value in not eating. That's not why we fast. And it's very clear that fasting for us is that basically it means that we're putting our life on hold. When you eat, it means there'll be a continuation of life. One of the things with mourners, one of the reasons we give them the first meal is that they, when somebody dies, they feel like they don't want, life doesn't want to continue. So you want them to eat because they have to realize that life does go on. And you need to eat and you need to take care of yourself and there'll be a future. And so when you fast, you're declaring that life is like putting no fuel in the tank. It's like life is stopping. But what a person is saying is that if Hashem is angry with me and I need to fix something, I'm going to stop right now what I'm doing, and I'm not going to put more fuel in the tank till I fix it, till I fix the motor. Then I'll put the fuel in. Then I'll plug it in again. But first I got to fix it. So when a person fasts, it means there's a problem, and my life will not continue as usual. I'm not going to take a drink, and I'm not going to eat until I fix the problem. So what they were saying was, we're going to fast, and we're not going to eat. That life will, we can't let life continue. Hashem is angry with us. Hashem has put this threat upon us. And so therefore we are going to take a day or 3 days to fix whatever needs to be fixed. But we're not going to keep on going as if there's no problem. So on the third day, B'yom HaShlishi, V'tilbush Esther Malchus. So Esther goes in and she gets dressed. Some people say, isn't it obvious that she got dressed? I mean, what they infer, this word V'tilbush, if a person works on getting spiritual, she was psyching herself up, so to speak. She was like praying. Sometimes a person can work on reaching a connection to Hashem. That's what, in other words, a person can, they can fast, they can do tshuva, they get themselves ready. And so that's what this v'tilbush means, that Esther like worked on, she knew this was life or death for the Jewish people. So she got herself ready for that moment. And she dressed herself. She prepared herself for what was going to be either going to be good or bad. And she came to the place of the king. And it says she stopped. V'tamod. She stood in the courtyard, no, facing the king. Now there's a debate why she stopped. There's a perek in Tehillim that some people said was written by Queen Esther for this moment. One of the medrash says that she prayed to Hashem to save her from the dog, which was Ahasuerus. And Hashem said, it's not nice to call him a dog. It's like he was a very awful king. It seems like that initially that when Ahasuerus saw her, he flew in his drunken rage. Because that was Ahasuerus. He was always getting angry and killing and off. And when he saw her coming and ignoring his rule, he was so angry, his first reaction was, ooh, his blood was boiling. And the angel came and gave him a whack. you know, to extend his scepter, because we believe that the hearts of kings is in the hand of Hashem. So she came and like she stopped because he wasn't extending the scepter. It wasn't good. That moment it looked very bleak. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the house of the king, opposite. Verse 2. And as soon as he saw the queen, something happened. She found favor in his eyes. He changed his mind. And he sends her his gold scepter that was in his hand, and that meant she wasn't going to be killed. Vatikra Esther, Vatikra Rosh, and she came and she touched the top of the. I think they have these scepters. I don't know exactly what they look like—a spear. Has anybody been to the Queen lately to see what they, what the scepters look like? A stick with a like a knob on the end, or jewelry on the end, or something. Or touch the tip of the scepter, the sharbit. Okay.
Next time Lord Sachs is here.
And we'll ask her why. Have you seen a scepter lately? Right, that's right. Okay. But Yomel HaMelech, and so they said, the king said to her, Malacha Esther Amalka, what do you want? Mabach, what do you desire? I'll give you half the kingdom. So it's so interesting. Here, a moment earlier, she could have been executed. And now, not only is she not executed, he said, what can I do for you? I'll give you half the kingdom, whatever you want. So it's interesting also, why does he say half the kingdom? So some people, they draw a map. If you take all the countries that he have, Jerusalem is like in the middle of the kingdom, is like half the kingdom. And what he was saying was, I'll give you anything except Jerusalem. I'll give you, because the Persian kings were always afraid that if the Jews rebuilt the temple, they would rebel. And so he was saying, I'll give you up to half. I'll do almost anything except that one thing, but I'm willing to do. And it'll be given to you. Now, Esther, there's a big question here, what her strategy was. This would seem to be the perfect time. The king says, whatever you want, Esther, I'll do. So she doesn't go for it. To tell Esther, so she says, if the king desires, you know what, let's have another meeting. Let's have another party. Let's have a drinking party, and we'll meet you tomorrow with Haman. This is strange. There's a whole page and a half in the Gemara what Esther was thinking here. Anybody want to? Why didn't she just ask right now? Now it could be that the king was just being polite and he might still be mad. And you have to know that also. Sometimes when you talk to someone, you want to make sure they're in the right mood for your request. So even though he said whatever you desire, he could still say no. You know, so maybe she thought, you know what? Let's let him calm down a little bit. Let's give him some drink. He likes to party, and then tomorrow maybe we'll be able to do something.
Well, she didn't trust him. She was afraid he was going to kill her one minute, the next minute. She thought, no, he's unstable today.
Maybe tomorrow I'll be in a better mood.
I think she must have really thought this out very carefully. In those 3 days, and obviously prayed.
And had a plan.
And even if she took half the kingdom, there's still Jews that are going to get killed in the other half.
Right, that's right.
You know.
And she needed more than half. That's right.
I think obviously God's a part of this.
Some people say that she was afraid that if she got the king to destroy Haman, Haman would get word of it, and he would be able to escape or to plead. And so she needed Haman there so that she could get an immediate, you know, off with his head kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So otherwise he might escape.
And the sons could take revenge.
So this had to be all thought out, exactly what she was planning to do.
Because that's what the king would do. He would immediately flare up, lose his temper, and
that's right. She would get him let him drink a little bit, and then she would lay the accusation about Haman, and that's how to get him. That was part of her plan, was to. There's also it could be she felt that the there's an interesting there's a famous story with I think it was with the Baal Shem Tov or somebody that had a child was not well, and they went to him and they asked him to pray, and he said, I can't help you. And the person went again to him and you must help me, Rabbi. My child is not well. I need you to pray. I can't help you. And then he tried again a third time, and the person then said, the Rebbe can't help me. I guess I have to pray to Hashem. And then the Rebbe knocked on his door and said, now I can help you. You know, like that. As long as you think that. So Esther was afraid that the people knew that she was in the palace. So some of them really didn't worry too much about Haman because they said, well, we got a sister in the palace. She'll take care of us. So if she had immediately fixed the problem, then the people would not have really worked to try to pray and try to fix this. So what she did was, she after the first meeting, she made a second meeting so that the people wouldn't rely on her. They would realize that she knew that if Hashem wanted to save us, he would. And so she did that in order to buy time. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll see hopefully we'll get to the downfall maybe next week.